This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. Listen to us on KPFK, KPFA, and other Pacifica affiliates, and watch us on Free Speech TV, Monday through Friday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. A video of a white man confronting a black man at a traffic stop in Memphis, Tennessee recently has gone viral. The white man, a supporter of Donald Trump, was filled with road rage and unleashed a racist rant for more than 4 minutes, calling the man videotaping him the N-word multiple times, expressing his support for Trump, yelling that black lives don't matter, and much more. America has always lived with the specter of racism, but in recent years it had become impolite to openly express racist views, until Trump's candidacy came along. Well, what does this new chapter in American culture and politics mean for all Americans? And how can the left in particular organize within a framework where hateful rhetoric is becoming normalized once more? My guest is Bill Fletcher. He's a racial justice, labor, and international activist, author of a number of books, including They're Bankrupting Us and 20 Other Myths About Unions and Solidarity Divided. He now joins me on the program. Welcome, Bill.
Glad to be on the program.
So first, let's talk about what this video, and we'll play it in a few minutes, represents. This is something that it appears, at least anecdotally, to be increasingly normalized. When you watched that video, did you feel that this just wouldn't have been something we might have seen that often, say, a year ago?
You know, Sonali, I'll tell you what my reaction was when I saw that. I felt like the United States is experiencing the picture of Dorian Gray, you know, and that the picture of Dorian Gray has been pulled out from the closet for all of the world to see. You know, for many years, to a great extent because of the victories we experienced in the 60s and 70s, there was a decline in the more outrageous sorts of language. But the Republicans began a counterattack back in the 1980s under the guise of criticizing so-called political correctness. So that's why what Trump is doing, it's not coming out of nowhere. There has been a steady erosion ever since the 80s. And so what Trump has just made it completely open. I mean, the closet door is open and we're looking straight at the picture of Dorian Gray.
Well, let's play a clip of this video. I have to say, Bill, I was so horribly disturbed when I watched this video. And I really want to warn people, if you don't want to be subjected to this, tune out. But I felt it was important for us to play this because I feel like it's important for us to face where we have come. After I watched this video, just driving around to go pick my kids up left me shaken every time I saw a white man, you know, driving that just looked like he might be a Trump supporter. And it left me shaken just having watched this. So here is the person who captured this on video is an African American who basically simply held his camera very calmly, and kudos to him for being so calm. And he captured this white man confronting him.
What's up, buddy?
Oh, now I'm a buddy.
Hey, Trump, all the way, Trump.
Hey, check this out. No, I got you. Because black lives don't matter. There ain't no proof. Just because you say something don't mean nothing.
Wow.
Prove it.
I appreciate it.
If black lives matter, I'm talking for you.
I appreciate it, sir. So black lives don't matter because you got a problem in traffic.
No, black lives don't matter. No, the problem in traffic was you were right behind me, sped up and drove around me, jumped in front of me, and made me slam on my brakes at a light. That makes you a nigger.
That proves
that black lives don't matter. Hey, no. If you have a side, if you have a subject, you tell me why black lives matter. Because people say so? You tell me why, how? You know what matter means? It's something that makes a difference. And let me tell you something, Martin Luther King died for a purpose. And you know what, you need to watch the very first episode of Boondocks, because he walks around ashamed of the people with the flat bill hats like you and the people that can't even keep their pants up. Really? Yeah, you put it on Facebook. I don't care. I don't care. Look at me.
You don't.
You're a punk that lives off social media. I don't even have a social media account. You know why? Because white lives matter.
Do that. I appreciate you sharing me your life story, sir.
What life story?
Why don't you go
Hey, let me handle this. Be a woman. What was my life history?
And we've been watching an excerpt from a video that has gone viral of a black man who had an altercation with a white man at a traffic stop. We only played half of it. The driver of the car videotaped the man who came up to him. Near the end of this clip that we just played, you might have heard what appears to be the white man's wife trying to speak up, and the man just basically told her to shut up and said, quote, be a woman. Bill, the N-word just rolled out off of his tongue so easily. And he very clearly said, black lives don't matter, white lives matter. Mm-hmm. This, to me, just was something that, at least for our younger audience, I don't think we are used to seeing this. But for those people who were active during the civil rights movement, was this normal America in the 60s?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that you're right that a lot of younger people are not exactly used to this. You know, we go to the movies, we see actors and actresses of color. We turn on television, we see this. There is some level of subtlety, respect. And so then all of a sudden something like this happens. And I think, you know, what's important, one of the things that's important about this video is the violence that's implied in this video. It's not just the language. You see, this is why our parents were wrong when they said to us years ago, sticks and stones will break your bones, but names will never hurt you. That's inaccurate. Names do. And particularly when there's a history associated with those names, there was immense violence in this particular individual. And violence directed not just at the black guy driving the car, but as you noted, and what many people may have missed, is the violence implied against the woman he was driving with. So I'm not making light of this at all when I say that this is the picture of Dorian Gray, but this is a picture that has been coming out increasingly. We've seen it through right-wing talk radio, various television programs, online, and then ultimately Trump says it's good to go.
Now, when we have this framework that we're living in, the alternative that is presented, the alternative to Trump that is presented, sadly, is a person that is really hard to get behind for other reasons, right? So we have Hillary mm-hmm. Clinton, who I know yourself and many others have said, people, we need to hold their nose and vote for her. And as we're recording this program, the election results aren't yet in, but polls are showing that she will likely be president, but she is so flawed, not for any of the email scandal stuff, but of course for her foreign policy, for her closeness to Wall Street, and for what seems to be a penchant for, you know, kind of creating her own rule book. It makes it really hard when you see Trump so easily be able to call her out on her and her husband's support for NAFTA and the TPP to actually come to Clinton's defense. So where's that left the left?
Well, I mean, look, it wasn't hard at all for me. Really wasn't. And I know that there will be some of my friends on the left that will call me everything but a child of God for saying that. But I'm just going to be very honest with you. When I see a white nationalist candidacy that is playing to anti-Semitism, to racism, to Islamophobia, to misogynism, it's really not that very difficult for me because I know what that means. I know about the history of the United States. So it's not that hard. I think that there are many challenges that we're gonna be up against with Hillary Clinton. There's no question about that. And I'm not looking at Hillary Clinton as a progressive or as one of us. But what I am looking at is the question of Who is going to be appointed to what? What judgeships are going to be filled? What's going to happen to the National Labor Relations Board? I mean, frankly, Sonali, I think from the standpoint of the left, the question is, who provides better operating space for us to operate and act? For the right wing, if you listen to the neo-fascists, they're doing exactly the same thing, but just on the other side. They're saying, the neo-fascists and the secessionists are saying that the Trump campaign offers them the best possible opportunity for growth, right? It doesn't matter whether they like Trump or trust him. They're looking at the context. I think for us on the left, we have to look at the context that in terms of the, we should be representing the future. What Trump's movement represents is a revolt against the future. And that distinction is so important, which is why I had absolutely no trouble voting for Hillary Clinton.
So, Bill, within, you know, we've had 8 years almost of President Obama, who, you know, came under different circumstances to the White House and in many ways disappointed progressives. Yes. In other ways, he held the line on some of the kinds of things that we expect from Democrats. But say, for example, on the drone wars, on deportation, he's been disappointing. But rather than being able to build on what his presidency has been, it's possible some of what he did that was progressive might fall back under a Clinton presidency. How do you view, or what sort of advice can you give to young left organizers, particularly given that the Republican Party itself is in disarray? Is there an opening to win over those Republicans who are disgusted with Trump's racism, misogyny, et cetera?
So my recommendations would start with this. Have no illusions about these elected leaders. It's not about trust. The biggest mistake that I would argue that was made in 2008 was believing that Obama was someone other than who he was. And there was enough information to know that he was not a radical. He certainly wasn't a socialist, wasn't a leftist. He was, you know, centrist. And he may have come out of a kind of left-leaning organizing background, but that's not who he was in his candidacy. I mean, that much was clear. So I think the first thing is to not have illusions. The second thing is that in the last 8 years, there have been tremendous movements that I think lay the foundation for the kind of politics that we have to look at. We had the Madison Uprising, we had Occupy, we've had this emergence of a reemergence of the immigrant rights movement, we've had the movement for Black Lives, and we had the Sanders campaign, we've had the LGBT movements. I mean, we've had a number of things that have unfolded, which was different than in a period leading up to Obama's administration. I actually think that, and this is why I'm optimistic, Sonali, I think that there are great possibilities now, but we need to shift gears. So it's not about sitting back and giving Clinton, if she's elected, any kind of pass, any kind of honeymoon period. It's immediately putting the pressure on, but also building on a statewide basis, state by state, we need to build progressive coalitions that are thinking about and fighting for power. So that's why I'm actually optimistic. And that's what I would argue that people need to be doing. Yes, vote for Clinton. And then tomorrow, or if you want to party for 24 hours, party if she wins. But tomorrow, we've got to get down to the real nuts and bolts of building state by state work.
And, you know, I think it certainly is a mistake that many, even among progressives, make, which is to get behind a candidate. I mean, that's just not the right kind of dynamic to have with a politician. We ought to, of course, adhere to our own vision and our own ideals and demand those politicians meet us where we are. I mean, we saw a lot of this with even the Sanders candidacy and then Black Lives Matter, I think, very successfully held his feet to the fire and changed him on that. And sadly, after the Sanders candidacy ended, we're seeing a lot of the I'm with her on the Clinton candidacy. In fact, her campaign slogan kind of demands that you fall in line behind her rather than demand she go to where you are. But Bill, I'm wondering what you make of, speaking of optimism, what you make of our millennials, this term that's used to describe younger Americans. Political polls seem to indicate that young Americans are far more progressive than we've had in a long time. There's a very strong generational divide in how people are kind of falling on the ideological spectrum.
Mm-hmm. It's also another source of my optimism. Hmm. I see that, and it's really fascinating with some of these polls that indicate that what, like 50% of millennials open to the idea of socialism. I mean, it's really phenomenal. However, if this is not captured organizationally, I don't mean by one super organization, but I mean by people building organization. If it's not captured, it will dissipate, because people said much the same about my generation. And it's very easy over time for this to weaken. And in the absence of organization, it will weaken. What the right has over us is money, they have a storyline, and they have organization. And we become very frustrated much too easily and fail to recognize, particularly at election time, that election time is generally a time for tactical alliances. It doesn't, in supporting someone like Clinton or whoever, it's not about giving up the store. It's a tactical alliance. We've got to keep our eyes on the prize, as they say, the long term.
Well, finally, then, Bill, are there specific issues that you can identify that you think would make for good issues for people to coalesce around? I'm thinking of the Dakota Access Pipeline fight, which is really the most important non-election story today. But there are others, right?
Absolutely. I think that the fight around the environment is really a fight that goes beyond the environment. It really does go to issues around the economy, the way we live. So I see that. The fight around jobs, the issue of foreign policy, which many people only get involved in when there's a war, but really what many of us hoped would be an outcome of the Obama administration, where the U.S. moved away from being a global bully and instead becoming a global partner. So I think that there are issues that we can organize around and push the whichever administration is elected. But we need to be clear, if Trump is elected, this is going to be a very, very difficult situation, even more difficult than when Ronald Reagan was elected in 1980, because what we have in Trump is someone who is willing to flirt with the idea of civil war if he doesn't get his way, and who has as his backers an armed section of right-wing populists. So we're dealing with a very precarious situation, which again is one of the reasons that I very enthusiastically voted for Hillary Clinton.
Well, Bill, even if Trump is not elected, which polls are implying and, you know, indicating he won't, the movement he unleashed and sort of empowered and emboldened, it's not going to go away. I mean, they're telling us they're not going away. They're very open about the fact that they're here to stay. That's kind of scary.
No, it is. And I think Sonali could play out in a number of different ways. So the armed wing of the right-wing populace actually might engage in terrorist activity, regardless of who wins. A second thing is that there could be a fragmentation of the Republican Party. And because keep in mind that the Republican establishment, very, very unsettled, not just that it was Trump that won, but the whole way that this played out. So there may be efforts to try to marginalize Trump and his supporters, which could conceivably lead to a split from the right, with the Republican Party and with something else that emerges. Even if the split does not happen, we should expect that this right-wing populism will intensify. And there's a couple of different wings that we need to pay attention to. There's Trump's wing, and then there's sort of the theocratic right, represented by people like Ted Cruz. Both of these forces are have an interest in something that many of us on the left aren't talking about, which is there's been a move for years towards the convening of another constitutional convention of the United States with the aim of changing the US Constitution. The theocratic right is very set on that. And I think that with it, you know, Trump's movement, to the extent that it coalesces with the theocratic right, might push this further. And that's going to be a state-by-state campaign to get the requisite number of states in order to convene a constitutional convention, in which case we might be looking at proposals for a united theocratic states of America.
Hmm. Well, Bill, always a pleasure to have you on. I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Good luck for the next 24 hours.
To us all. Thank you very much.
Bill Fletcher is a racial justice, labor, and international activist and author of a number of books, including They're Bankrupting Us and 20 Other Myths About Unions and Solidarity Divided. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. We're also on facebook.com/ruwithsonali, where we will have a live stream of a special live election broadcast on election night starting at 8 p.m. Pacific.